Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 31. I am Charles, and I'm working on a better introduction for everybody. And I think it's been a slow process of evolution, but I think we're getting there.
No, it's not getting better, Charles. It's getting worse.
It's not getting better. I've got an introduction tote.
Okay. All right.
I'm approaching the introduction tote.
Which way is it going? Is it an up or more of a side by side?
I think it just feels like a wall, and I'm banging my head into it. And eventually, if I work hard enough, I'll have a very, very flat and square forehead.
That's just the math. That's not us.
So you're Charles.
Yes, I am. I think.
And we'll
revisit this later.
Afternoon. It's and I'm Brandon. And Lydia was right. We need music. We need music for our intro. So Charles promised this. If you have been listening to this podcast forever, first off, you know, my apologies. Second off, we promised that there would be intro music played on ukulele by Charles around episode 2.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, and that's about 29 episodes ago.
Okay.
So
we're getting there.
There's been enough time to ferment. I think I've got some ideas.
It's eventually consistent.
Should we set a deadline for that one?
Well, it didn't work last time, but might as well.
Do we set a deadline? Was it like by the next episode?
We'll check the archives.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Are you guys capturing this in like a Trello board or like a Jira or something? How does that work?
You can be our project manager. With us today is Mondo Escamilla, developer extraordinaire, troubadour, and general raconteur, man about town in Austin, Texas. So welcome, Mondo.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm trying to transition to life coach for 4-year-olds. it's slow going, but I think I really got a niche here.
I think it's great. I think I know how that goes. It's get that out of your mouth. Don't put that on your mouth. Why did you just put that in your mouth?
Yep.
Feet off the table.
Pretty much. Yep. Don't eat that. Yeah.
And the people that don't like the Dadcast are bracing themselves at this moment in time. They know what they're in for.
There's nobody who feels like that.
Come on.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That data pool is empty.
We're so happy to have you. You and I have been talking about doing a podcast together for literally 3 years at this point and haven't been able to make it work until today. So we're really excited. There's I have a list of probably 30 different topics I'd like to talk to you about. So we're going to cover them all one per minute for a 30-minute podcast.
We're just going to grind through it.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Your lightning round.
We can't clamp time and scope, man.
Nope.
Yeah. It's like the Iron Triangle. We just got to let one of them slip.
That's right. Yep.
So,
well, can't we increase the cost? Isn't that the one we can slip on and make it more expensive podcast that just goes faster?
Sure. I mean, I'm already drunk, so.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Fine by me.
Mondo walked in the office, and there's only one person who can make me set down the latte and switch to bourbon. and he walked right up the elevator.
That's me.
Actually, he walked into the elevator and stood there.
So, Mondo, you have a history.
But he's here now.
You have a history and a legacy at the Frontside, actually. I am not 100% familiar with it. You want to run us through that?
Sure, yeah. A quick life story. About 39 years ago, my mom and dad got together. And No, I think that I met Charles Lowell through a buddy of ours, Matt Knopp, way back in the golden age of Austin internet service providers. You know, we worked together, and he introduced me to Charles, and we kind of orbited each other and the Austin.
Were you
Austin
at the
tech
Were
scene.
You at the Eden Matrix?
I was at Zilker Internet Park.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, we kind of ran in the same Austin. Mm-hmm. Nerd circles for a long time. And a couple of years back, I was looking for a change, and Charles was looking for some folks to build up a front-end development team for a product for a company in Seattle that was doing search engines for university libraries. And so we started working together and opened up this glorious office that we're in now here, and we have since amicably parted ways, but the front side has moved on and grown and consumed all available Ember resources in in Central Texas.
I think it's telling that But I think your experience here must have scarred you on UI work. Because Mondo left here and went straight for the back end.
Yeah, well, that's that's where I've always belonged, I think. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, we did a lot of really interesting front end work on that project and others. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think as is our custom, right, we're always just a little bit ahead of the comfort curve when it comes to technology and what we're trying to push, right? Which is good and has done very well for, I think, both of our careers. But I was a little tired of the front end stuff for a while. But you know, the last project that I've been working on at work has been D3 on top of other more complicated D3. And it's been all JavaScript mm-hmm. all the time for the past month and a half or 2 months. And it's, you know, the state of the art has come a long way. I was
a whole new
impressed.
Ball game, isn't it?
Man, it is like night and day, you know, from where I started, you know, doing web development back in 96, 97, right? And from the times of XML HTTP request being something that was only in Internet Explorer and you had to install it as like plugins and stuff on other browsers to where we are today, right, is nothing short of mind-boggling.
Yeah. It's like you lay down some concrete, put in some wall-to-wall carpet. It turns out hell is a pretty inhabitable space.
It's not bad, man. It's not bad. There's whiskey. No one told me there was whiskey here. Yeah. Man.
That's pretty much requisite, I think, actually, in this profession in general. So about, like, how did you get into software development? Were you CS trained, or did you come up through a different route?
Oh, good question. I was always a nerd growing up in school, but never really got too deep into computer programming until I got to college, and I started off as an electrical engineering major at University of Texas, and quickly realized that that wasn't going to be for me. But I kind of found myself gravitating towards some early internet providers here in town, working as, like, you know, phone technical support. And phone technical support quickly morphed into writing Perl scripts to automate things, which morphed into doing kind of systems administration work, which morphed back into programming. And yeah, I kind of just accidentally fell into it, you know. I mean, I'd always played video games and had dreams of, you know, being a video game something or other, if not a programmer, a, you know, designer or something. That was kind of where my love affair with computers and technology started. But no, there was never really a concerted effort on my part. I eventually did transition into trying really hard to get a computer science degree and then not quite finishing it off. But yeah, it was really kind of a, for me, right place at the right time kind of thing, right? I came to university in 1994, which was just at kind of the conflux of dial-up internet access becoming prevalent and readily available, combined with, you know, the World Wide Web coming in and the accessibility of programming and technology from, like, the front-end perspective at least, right, being something that you could, you know, right-click on a program and view source and copy it and paste it into something else, and boom, now you have a mini computer program, right? That's, you know, it wasn't like that 3 years before I started college, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I fell into it, and now here I am, you know, paying my bills and raising my kids all on standing on the shoulders of giants, so to speak. Mm.
So it sounds like you've been doing DevOps for like 20 years.
A little bit. So we didn't call it we didn't call it DevOps back then. we called it being a systems administrator.
Back then, we just called it being cranky.
Yeah, yeah. The crankiness was always an important part of that job. But you know, the tenets have never changed, right? Like, it was always super important to be detail-oriented and being organized and knowing where things are and having scripts that let you reproduce things and be able to build up machines and environments, you know, with the tools that you had at hand, right, which were like Perl scripts and, you know, Corn Shell scripts and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's been super awesome to see our industry move in a direction where that side of things has become recognized as important, right? And now we have these whole industries built up around, or not industries, ecosystems, right? Kind of built around tooling and around training and around making it so that the folks who do that job have the support that they need every day.
I would say industries is an appropriate word if you consider, you know, venture capital funding for the stuff that I'm seeing now with companies like HashiCorp and Docker
point.
And, you know, like this is actually becoming a place that people are putting a lot of time, energy, money, and thought into now. And it used to be just like a thing that you would do out of sort of necessity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't around for that. I came up in the age of Google, so I programmed everything by copying and pasting Stack Overflow answers, which to this day serves me very, very well.
Me too, man. That's you know, it's funny how you would think that it would be a lot easier, right? You'd think it would be a lot easier with all the resources that we have at hand, but it doesn't really seem that much easier. In fact, it sometimes seems harder and more disheartening by the day. So I mean, maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Well, we've made our problems more complicated as a result of like, oh, hey, we've simplified our ability to answer these previous questions. Therefore, we can ask more complicated ones. And that complexity has a tendency to kind of feel sort of intimidating. And like you've got to keep chasing it or else you'll fall off the treadmill and die.
Yeah, yeah, that never can quite catch that dragon.
That's a very helpful answer.
you guys jog on treadmills surrounded by lava, right?
I was
right?
having trouble thinking about my life. But you really framed it for me.
A treadmill on an island surrounded by alligators. So
Yep, and then you fall off and die.
Yeah, radioactive alligators.
I came from Mondo. I came from other industries. It's bad. There a lot of jobs are this is tough. What we do is really tough. But there are other things too that they feel similar. It just doesn't seem like it moves as fast.
Oh God. You know, that's something that has been weighing heavily on my heart the past couple of weeks, right? Is that, you know, we give our industry, a lot of shit sometimes, but, like we have it pretty fucking easy, to be honest. You know, I mean, we do hard stuff and we work hard. That's not saying that we don't, right? But I mean, you know, we're not laying bricks, right? And in the sun, and we're not mowing lawns, and we're not, you know, teaching the next generation of kids to, you know, not be animals and getting paid, you know, pennies on the dollar for it. You know, we've got it pretty good, and the problems that we have seem to be kind of our own making. You know. Mm-hmm. And we have it in our power to make things better, right? And it's we kind of only have ourselves to blame, I think. Like that's the point that I'm personally at right now, right? And I need to get past that to the like, well, how exactly do I contribute to fixing the situation?
Yeah. I know what you're saying, and it kind of comes in waves. Like the optimism, sort of like, and then you come down on a slope, and you're like, oh, this is really tough to try to have an impact and do work that's meaningful. And one of the things that I wanted to, man, there's so many things I want to talk about with you, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was this idea that you have a huge obligation at home as well. Like, it's
I have 18 children. and you know, those guys don't feed themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Pope's pretty insistent about this deal, and you know, you don't want to cross that guy.
You know, nah, not at all, man. No, not that hat.
So you have what? How many kids do you have?
I have three children, three wonderful, glorious children,
What are their ages?
Yeah, they range in age from 9 to 14. You know, they're by far and away the best thing that I've ever done. You know, and I have an obligation to them kind of first and foremost, right, above everything else.
And so you're trying to like, you want to have a positive impact on the world through your work and not necessarily, and not worry that it's net negative, but you also have to do work to keep that thing going. And it's really easy to kind of get lost in, sometimes in the day-to-day of the work itself. And so you and I have had like lengthy conversations about trying to hold all that together and trying to not fall apart as a person while you're trying to hold together the idea of, you know, the stuff that you feel like you're supposed to do, run that treadmill on your industry and have a positive impact and maintain time with your family. Meaning the positive impact stuff means, you know, you participate in community stuff and volunteer and help. And, you know, there's all these various kinds of pressure that are either intrinsic or that we put on ourselves or that our workplace will put on us. I imagine that like you don't take on like your job. You talk about it being comparatively not so bad, but it's, you know, I know what you do for a living. What you do is relatively tough. It takes a lot of mental effort and a lot of time and energy and a lot of stress associated with it. I'm wondering, you seem like the kind of person to me that if you weren't careful, that would like consume your whole life because you like just digging in and solving those problems. Is that fair to say, or am I missing something?
No, it's pretty fair. I do have a kind of strong tendency to let myself get wrapped up in work and in solving problems, right? Especially working at a place like where I do, where I kind of love the place and I love the people who are there, right? And I enjoy the work that we do. And so it's real easy to be to get lost in that.
Yeah, I'm wondering how you manage that tension, you know, between...
Yeah,
because I think you do it really well. Yeah. Like I certainly hold you as somewhat of a role model. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly when I started having children, you already had your three children, and so you know, watching the way that you balanced work, because you know, in 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when we were working together, you know, that's kind of I was just becoming a father and whatnot, and so I definitely, you know, saw the way that you were able to balance your work, balance your home life, and also kind of your greater technical community, and be actively and meaningfully contributing to all three of those in a very satisfying way. And I was always very impressed with it. And like I said, I kind of hold you as a role model in that regard.
Well, thank you guys. I'm all verklempt over here.
And if I can put a finer point on it, the reason this is the first thing that came to mind when I wanted to talk to you was I had the same impression. You and I talked together and I realized, oh, this person is taking meaningful and unusual steps to achieve balance and achieve a sense of priority of things that matter 20 years from now, as opposed to things that matter, you know, by some arbitrary deadline. And I'm curious as to how you arrived at that style of thinking, and set some of those boundaries yourself. Because I identify with your sense of like, hey, the stuff that we do is important and it feels important, but I am worse about setting those boundaries. And I'm curious how you arrive at that point in your life.
Sure. Well, I don't suggest people following my path exactly. Maybe you can kind of skip around most of the path and just get to the good part. But what really got me started rethinking the way that – or kind of reframing the way that I spend my time was I went through a divorce, right? And I got a real strong wake-up call, you know, that I wasn't being the kind of husband and father and partner that I wanted to be or that I should have been, right? And so – As a result of that, I kind of took stock, right, of what was going on. And, I mean, for a long time, I was, you know, without the kids, and I would see them once every other weekend kind of thing, you know, like most fathers who don't have primary custody of their children. You know, and that was killing me, and it was killing them. And I wanted to fix that. I wanted to make it different. I wanted to make it better, both for the kids' sake and for mine. So I decided to try a little experiment. And rather than having the kids go to daycare after school, I decided that I would try to pick them up from school when they were school let out at, you know, 2:30, and then stay with them or have them stay with me until their mom got off of work, and then she would pick them up. You know, when she would normally pick them up from daycare after she got off work, instead, I would act as, you know, quote fingers daycare. And that's that really kind of changed everything. That's what set me down this path of time enlightenment, right? Where I realized that I could spend time with the kids that was honest and meaningful and mindful, right? And it would give me what I needed, and it would give them what they needed, right? Which is kind of, you know, time and attention from their father, which they weren't getting. And then I would go back to work afterwards, or I would go to a meetup, right? Or I would go to Cafe Bedouins, which is this little get-together that we have here on Tuesdays where kind of independent and not-so-independent folks get together and work on side projects, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that I would reach out for the community in those after hours, right, is kind of because I was just depressed and lonely. You know, my ex-wife would come and pick up the kids, right, and I would just kind of stare around the house and think, like, well, now what do I do? You know, and I would get back to work, or I would go and meet up with some folks and hang out and talk shop. And it kind of filled a hole that was left inside of me, you know. And the joining of all of those things really made me realize how easy it is to extend one part of your life too far over other parts, right? It's really easy to say, oh, I can't pick up the kids from school today because I have to work,
mm-hmm.
right? Or I can't go to the XYZ meetup because we have this deadline of tomorrow that has to be hit, right? And for sure, sometimes those things are very concrete and very cut and dry and it has to be done. But a lot of times I was noticing that I was putting the kind of undue pressure on myself, right? That I wanted to get this done, that I wanted to show that I was, you know, team lead material, or I was senior engineer material or whatever. And I was sacrificing too much. And so I changed it. And you know, and it's been great, right? And it's one of those things where it changes over time. You know, for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, I haven't done a single community thing at all. You know, the difference is that now the kids they're getting older, right? And they're doing things, extracurricular activities after school. My son is he plays football and he does band, right, in high school. So Thursday nights, I'm at his football games, and Friday nights, I'm at the varsity football games watching him march around and do stuff. My younger son and daughter play baseball, so I'm out there going to their baseball games, helping out at their baseball practices, you know, and there's just no time for the community stuff, right? So I'm actively choosing to let their activities take precedence over that stuff, right? Because they're not always going to be there, right? Like, my son's a freshman in high school, my oldest kid.
Dude, I can't even believe that.
I know.
That's like, yeah.
Yeah. And so in 4 years, Charles, you know, I'm not going to be able to go to his stuff anymore, right?
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's the way of things, right? But, you know, for the next 4 years, he has my undivided attention whenever I can give it.
So we're going to be we'll be looking for you to come back after 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
We're setting a deadline.
That sounds good to me. Just keep the keep the bourbon flowing, and I'll be back. I mean, that's how he gets me to the football games. So he knows his dad.
Don't mind him.
That's right.
Yeah, just my dad.
You were always, yeah. So since I've known you, you've always you've had unusual management, unusual what's the word? An unusual amount of awareness of your own schedule. That I think a lot of people kind of let their day steer them around, and work needed me late. And you've always been sort of, you've had a rigidity to it that I have to imagine resulted in some trade-offs in terms of employment and in terms of your relationship with employers or types of jobs you're willing to take. What sort of Has it presented specific challenges, or have you found mostly like the people that you want to work with wind up being cool with your needs in terms of work-life balance stuff?
Well, I've been really, really fortunate so far. This kind of rigid schedule, like you describe it, really kind of got started when I was working for a company, and we were the entire engineering team was remote, right? So that afforded me some flexibility in my schedule. And the company that I'm working at now, Union Metrics, was founded by two old friends of mine, Jen and Hayes Davis. And we were friends way before I started working at the company. And so when we started talking about working together, that was kind of one of the things that we really didn't even have to discuss, right? They knew my situation. They knew where I was coming from. And so they understood that it was kind of a non-starter, that, you know, I was going to need to have this break in the afternoons where I go in and, you know, hang out with the kids, you know? And it's been fine. And they've never once made me feel like I was the odd man out, or they had to make sacrifices, or I had to make sacrifices, at least unwillingly, right, for this. And it's not to say that it always happens. You know, there have been times where there's a fire that needs putting out, or a meeting that I just can't miss, mm-hmm. you know, but I can probably count those on one or two hands total over the 4 years I've been there.
Yeah. I think it's becoming more and more commonplace, but it's unfortunate that, you know, that workplaces that are like these are kind of, certainly in the past, have been the exception and not the norm.
Absolutely.
I actually had a moment when I was in Finland this summer with my family, and I experienced this many, many times over the course of you know, my travels over there, and even like but especially there, is that children and family are integrated into all areas of life. Mm. Like, it's not considered, like, I feel like there's this kind of artificial separation between your family and whether you're going out, or mm-hmm. whether you're eating somewhere, or whether you're like at work. Like, certainly I experienced this a lot this summer, that Finland is just very family friendly mm-hmm. in the way that, like, if you go to a state park or whatever, or you go to like even just a restaurant or a coffee shop, there will be an area where there will be activities for very young children. There will be activities for children who are like 5 or 6, all the way up until like, you know, 10 or 11, to kind of run the whole spectrum. And you see that everywhere. I was seeing this in hotels. I was seeing this in restaurants. I was seeing this even like in, like, not bars, but, you know, kind of like pub grill type places that you might go and have a few drinks, stuff like that. And I certainly noticed that in the time that I was living in England, like people would bring their babies to the bar, to the pub, to the local pub, like all the time. It was just something you did. The family kind of, there was the whole like spectrum of ages socialized together. And certainly there were times when you would go off with your kind of own age group. But I feel like there is this kind of weird artificial separation. And that's also played out in the work life too, over there, where they have things like daycare and, you know, just things to make it easier to do activities with your children. You know, like, how many conferences are there that you feel like, Mondo, you've not wanted to go to because, like, you know, the idea of being able to bring your kids was like, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, so
I feel
the kids, right. I haven't been to a conference in a long time. And a big part of that is because either they happen on weekends where I have the kids, right? Mm-hmm. Or B, even if it wasn't a weekend where I had the kids, you know, there was no affordance for them, right? Like, I couldn't bring them. Right. I couldn't bring them with me because my youngest is 9 years old, right? And I'm not going to put the weight of watching her and her younger brother on a 14-year-old, right? And kind of give him, you know, $20 and tell him to, you know, keep the kids fed till I get out of the conference. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that's
right. Right.
There's nothing there, like, for them.
Yeah. It feels like most conferences are organized without the even thought that people might attend who have children.
So as you were talking about Finland, Charles, I was talking to another local developer named Terrence Lee here, and at lunch today, and we were talking about NodeConf. And he's like, he was talking about that he wanted to see something like this happen in Austin because NodeConf was like happened at this campground, but they have an entire day filled with activities designed for kids of varying ages.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, this idea that, you know, not everybody has a family, but our whole industry is tilted to disfavor people who do have families
or
absolutely aren't willing to ignore them, which tends to disfavor women in the industry rather than men, right? Like this is another way we tilt our industry in favor of men because they're traditionally more able to walk away and have, you know, have somebody else at home take care of the family while they go do stuff. That's not so for, you know, divorced or single dads. It's not so for moms. So we have this whole industry that's tilted toward the people who can either be single or emulate being single for a period of time. And there are people sticking like a wedge into that right now with stuff like NodeConf. And I think that will require certainly concerted effort. We've talked to a couple people who talk about childcare at meetups, but at our Ember one, we actually tried to put it together and we couldn't get enough interest from people. We had one person specifically request it, but no other takers.
Sure.
Yeah. And the thing is like, you know, with the childcare, I kind of see that as like, that's like level zero, right?
Because that's minimum.
That's a minimum because essentially then you're kind of allowing to emulate being single without what, you know, instead of having like an actual activity that's relevant to the subject of the conference.
Right.
I'm really curious. I had not heard this about NodeConf, but I am super stoked because I think that, you know, especially, you know, once children of a certain age, and that age is very, very young, they can really start to be appreciating technology.
Oh God,
and not just the consumption of it,
right?
But kind of seeing it up close.
Could you imagine if you had been a kid? How cool would that have been to be dragged along to a thing where you like build robots or do something cool with programming and have that be a guided, fun experience rather than
I remember in the keynote for the Google Developer Conference in 2013, I think it was. You know, Larry Page was talking about that was a formative experience when he was 8 years old and his dad took him to a robotics conference. I think, you know.
So there's a couple aspects. You talk about level zero being, you know, at activities being just the ability to acknowledge that people might have kids with them when they come try to attend these things and have some affordance for that instead of make people feel like if they have kids, they just might as well not go at all. I think that's true of like the sort of jobs that you wind up selecting into where you want to work with a place that like certainly this is a goal of ours at the front side, obviously, is acknowledging that people may have a family and have every possible level zero type of affordance from healthcare setup to, gosh, what else? Just flexibility of schedule, the ability to accommodate people that may need to have other things going on with their lives and not make them feel guilty for not being a part of whatever everybody else is able to do because they have a different set of freedoms because they're not accommodating a family or whatever. Certainly, that's top of mind for us. I think that maybe a cultural value of Austin that seems to be more true here than like maybe places I've lived or worked. Certainly in New York City comes to mind. And I think it's okay, but just acknowledging that people have different life situations it's a surprisingly difficult thing to get people to kind of wake up to. Cause it's the other way is just the default. It's free and easy to set something up if you don't have to accommodate. Like the amount of work to accommodate kids and set up programs for them at some of these conferences, probably. Ugh. Could you imagine running a conference and
not at all?
I mean, it's hard.
Like, it sounds awful.
It's hard enough for me to like.
I can't get my kids to go to bed. You know, I can't get them to like take a shower and get dressed and like not set the house on fire. You know, I can't imagine, you know, a conference worth of kids, you know, playing with computers, right? I don't know how you do that.
But somebody does.
Somebody does. That's amazing.
It takes a lot of expertise. But I mean, I think it's more about kind of realizing how to bait the hook, so to speak, so that the kids, you know, they are drawn into the activity.
Yeah.
That's always the difficult part. Mm-hmm. But I think with enough expertise, I mean, it can be done. But it means finding those people who know how to set those things up.
So that means that, like, as a participant in a community and as an employer, you have a lot of opportunities to kind of create a space where it's safe to allow people to have the kind of whatever balance means to them. Like, for some people, they may be single, but they want to take their dog to the lake. You know, like, that that means something to that person. And being that flexibility benefits all people that have any, you know, any inkling that life may exist outside of work. This is a tough one in terms of, like, family and work stuff. Kind of like, is there a way to blend those where, like, I don't even know how to form the question yet, but the way to blend family and work life so that they don't really step on each other's toes, because you do need to, like, when I'm holding my daughter, I can't program.
Right.
Like, that's just fundamental. So maybe there just needs to be some, like, I know Charles has an office to separate his workspace from family space and keep each of those safe and sort of like the family part
that
sacred.
Actually, I mean, Mondo's and I started working together right as that was happening.
Yep.
And you remember it was pretty distracting. I don't understand how people can do it. You have to have a mass of discipline, which I do not possess, not even close, to be able to maintain that separation. And so it's, you know, having that physical separation of being able to just go to the office, like, almost that was the most important thing in getting an office.
Yeah. And you ask that discipline, not only of yourself, but also of your children, you know, for me, I was never able to say, you know, when daddy's in this room, right, don't come and knock on the door, you know, don't come inside. You know,
it's an unreasonable expectation.
You're exactly right.
And you're setting them up to fail.
Right.
And like, and how it's like, what are you going to yell at them? Because they want to come in and spend time.
Exactly.
With you?
And that's what you find yourself doing. Right. Yep, like you find yourself getting mad at your children for wanting to spend time.
Yeah, that's
with
behavior you want to disincentivize. Well, yeah.
Right. And it's the image of you that you're creating for the future for this person. Right. So you talk about the 20-year plan. Like, is this a person that I want to be alienated from in 20 years because I showed a consistent priority over them of something else?
Yep. Yep.
That's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah.
Like in the moment, the amount of discipline it actually requires of yourself to look at this little person that's trying to interrupt you when you're focused on a task, and it is so high to not tell them, like, hey, not right now, cut it out or whatever. And so working from home wound up being really challenging for me. Mondo, do you work from home or office or both?
Yeah. So we have an office, but what I'll do is I'll go home and spend some time with the kids, you know, but they're older now and they don't need me, you know, to be all up in their biz, right? So we'll do a little homework and snacks and kind of catch up on the day, you know, but for another hour and a half or so, maybe, you know, hour to an hour and a half, you know, I'm just sitting there at the kitchen table working, you know, and they're off watching TV or they're, you know, but I understand that it's kind of that hour and a half while they're there, you know, it's not garbage time, but it's also not time that I'm going to be, you know, 100% fully invested in the zone, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if they come up to me and want to go throw the baseball, right? Or if they come up and need help with a little project that they're working, whatever, right? You know, if they need my attention during that time, they get it. And that has served us well.
Yep. One thing I've noticed is I don't know. Maybe I'm by default a bad person. But whatever the right thing is to do in a given moment is usually the opposite of what I want. So if it's a day, like the other part of balance is like days off, what I want to do is just crash and recuperate from like a rough week of hard work and stress and all that stuff. And the right thing to do is to get up and go find something fun to do with the family and put the effort and thought into doing something together. And, that's 100 times harder than Netflix and chill, you know?
Yep.
And I have come to realize that from my own level of like personal happiness and dealing with depression in the past and stuff like that, the thing to do to stave off any of those negative things in the future, including regret, is to do the thing that just sounds like it sucks the most. Like, I make like I love the water park. I like the water park fine. I convince myself that I love it so that I take my family there because it is fun to have your kids having fun in your stead, kind of, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Any fun you actually have as a bonus on top?
Yeah, I mean, water parks are up there with probably with the dentist as my least favorite places in the world. You know, but I will say that, you know, when we go there, we have the best time, you know. And once I'm there, I'm not thinking about the millions of children and all of their grubby little hands and bacteria-laden bodies that have just infested this entire place, right? And how – I'm not thinking about how everything is sticky, and you don't want to know what it is that's making it sticky. I'm not thinking about that, you know. I'm thinking about how much fun they're having, right? And how they're gonna remember this. You know, they're gonna remember this in 20 years. Yep. And that makes it better. But oh man, just the thought of it is making me kind of shrivel inside.
And there's a ton of other stuff, you know, like there are things that you are all that is remembered is whether you were there or not. Like the activities and the baseball games and like are your kids both into sports, all three of them? Or are they?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know where they get it from, because they certainly don't get it from their father. but yeah, man, they sport it up real good. And I do my best. You know, I do my best to be there. I do my best to be there for practices and games. And, you know, they get disappointed when I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think also, you know, it's you know, you talk a lot, Brandon, about like counter-steering counter-steering into a turn, too. I think that by making that upfront investment and just spending time with it, it actually makes the relationship easier. And you actually are it makes it so that, you know, you are able to have more time to, you know, invest in the other things like work and whatever. So there's not like, you know, when if you invest up front to spend time with your family and with your children, then when you do ask for a little time away to say, oh, I need to do this thing, or you know what, I can't play with you tonight, I've got to go to the Ember meetup or whatnot, then that goes really smoothly, and they, you know, they give you a kiss and they're like, see you in the morning.
They totally get it. They really do.
And it's not like, okay, you know, like it's not like but I do know, like, I do feel a visceral pain every time I travel. Like, it is like getting your heart ripped out of your chest every time you board a plane to go to a different city. And so I cut a huge, huge amount of that out of my life this year. Last year, I traveled a ton for conferences and stuff. This year, the second half of the year, I had to travel for exactly one conference. So
makes a huge difference.
It's big. And all of that stuff together, what's funny about it, and I don't know if we'll have time to explore it, but the funny thing about all that stuff, we talk about counterintuitive and the counter-steering into all this stuff, is I think all of those things taken together make somebody a tremendously better programmer. Because now you understand the scope, the types of trade-offs that happen over multiple decades. And you start thinking in those terms of that kind of perspective, and you start thinking about problem solving in a different way. Things, you know, and you get less like super frustrated and table flipping angry, even though I still do, at like, you know, your tests fail for stupid, silly reasons. You may get frustrated, but you also can step back and realize on a 20-year time scale, this means very little. And also start thinking about, wow, is the kind of a scope of problems that I'm solving as a programmer a 20-year type of problem? Or is this really not going to mean anything in 20 years? And maybe that makes a person want to gravitate to solving problems that that have a greater ripple effect in society or whatever, you know? Like, I actually think that on a very large scale, learning to make those kind of trade-offs is a really big deal in terms of making somebody a better programmer, and as a programmer, a better contributor to society, if such a thing exists. And it's funny, like, Mondo, like, that so much of my thinking on this has been shaped by our, like, late-night conversations at Cafe Bedouins over this stuff. There's, like, so many more aspects about, you know, meditation and sleep and stuff like that we don't have time to get into. But
Man, don't get me started on sleep.
Yeah. No, that'll be a different deal.
I will just tell this. Sleep is a competitive advantage.
Yeah, it really is. It
is a competitive advantage, I've come to see.
Yeah. I've never felt it positively. I always feel the negative downside of it, right? Like, I know how bad I perform when I get 3 or 4 hours of sleep versus 8 or 9, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you call it? Man. You called it a, I can't remember, not a fool, like fool's gold. You called it something like that, though, like a false economy.
Yes, it's a staying up late is a false economy.
Yeah.
Completely. And that's actually this is a whole other discussion. Yeah, but what
you try
what
to
I
cheat
usually
at balance
do,
by doing it.
Yeah, you try and cheat the balance, but you can't, like, the math. You know, the equation must add up at some point. So what I do is, if I need to shave hours and cut hours, I'll cut hours. I'll front load them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say I will wake up at 3 a.m. if I need to get 3 hours of sleep or 4 hours of sleep. Then it needs to be high enough priority for me to wake up at 3 a.m. And sometimes I'll, you know, if it's really like when I think of it that way, I'm like, okay, am I gonna? Because it's very easy to just keep going.
Oh yeah,
right. That's the easy path. But if you say, okay, I'm gonna go to bed at 10, and I'm gonna wake up at 3 a.m.
But
you kind of do the math and you're like, wow, is this really?
So if it demands the same urgency as like catching
does
a
it
plane?
Really? Yeah, exactly. Does this demand the same urgency? And sometimes that answer is yes.
So
but you'll find it's a lot less.
So what bars are open at 3 a.m? How does that work? I think maybe we're talking about different things. Sorry.
Just woke up.
Just woke up Bar and Grill.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Oh, can you imagine?
Man. Everybody knows your name.
Tequila Sunrise.
It's where everybody knows your name, and they don't judge you for wearing pajamas.
Can I have a steak and eggs?
Yeah.
Steak and eggs and gin.
And gin.
Mondo, I just wanted you to know, man, I'm glad to talk to you about this stuff. This is something that Charles, I didn't know Charles felt the same way I did. And I've been, honestly, I didn't get a chance to say this either. I'm very much inspired by Charles on this stuff. It's changed a lot about the way I conduct myself as a dad. I've asked my family to make tremendous sacrifices over the last few years. Asking them to make fewer of those when it comes to my time has brought tremendous rewards into my life. And so we don't ever really talk about that on the podcast because it doesn't seem to directly relate to programming, but it turns out it really does. Mm-hmm. And learning that from you, Mondo, was a big deal, and studying Charles. So I wanted to thank both of you for sort of providing some inspiration and an example of, even though I'm sure neither of you feel like you're perfect at it, it's definitely been inspirational to me as a person that's trying to do better.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, man, where you don't have to be perfect at this kind of stuff, right? Like, we all make mistakes, and we're not gonna hit the mark as often or as well as we want to, you know. But just shifting from the default stance of like not even trying to actively trying makes such a big difference, yep. You know, and pays off such huge dividends. And it's not, you know, I mean, we talk about this in regards to our children, right? But that's just because that's our experience, right? I mean, you know, you can have these, we need to make these same kinds of decisions and priority shifts in any kind of relationships that we have, right? Relationships mm-hmm. with significant others, relationships with, you know, friends and extended circles of friends, right? Like we can't just let one part of our lives totally encompass us, right? Because everything else will fall to the wayside, and we'll kind of shrink because of it.
I think that's an excellent note to close on. Mm-hmm. That it's like balance has kind of become sort of a, I don't know, what's the term? It's like a cliche, but the idea of not letting one side dominate, I think, is a great way to look at it. And again, I wanted to thank you for the inspiration you've given us, and for just being a cool, generally hilarious dude. And
Man,
so glad to have you in our community, and it's fun talking with you. And I hope we get to do this again.
Oh man, it's been great. I've been you know, a long-time listener, first-time caller. So this has been awesome for me.
Yeah, apologies to all the other callers. Like, we're going to have to let you go. So this Boy. One went a little long.
It got a little awkward.
All right, thanks. And I think that's going to do it for us. Again, if people have people that we think we should talk to or topics or whatever, hit us up at the front side on the Twitters. And thanks again, Mondo. People can find you on Twitter at, what is it?
Yeah, it's the world's largest Twitter handle. So yeah, at Mondo Escamilla, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, if you can spell it, you can find him.
There you go.
And there you go. All right, Mondo, thanks again, and we'll see everybody next time.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.